on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of InvestTalk. It is the 23rd of October, 2015. And you're listening because you have above average interest in making the most of your money that you make. And I enjoy helping people organize their money life. It's kind of interesting and fun. It's work, but it's also interesting and fun. You know, you got to focus on what can make a difference down the road for your retirement. Often the biggest barrier to financial independence is our own human nature, the way we think about money. You find it hard to save and easy to spend. At least most people do, and I certainly do. It's harder to save and spend. The benefit for me in my young life was that my parents were pretty frugal, and they taught me young to not overspend, and borrowing money was not a good idea. Even though they were not, you know, well-educated parents, they weren't. I love them dearly before they passed away, but they did teach me basic things. And one is don't borrow money and don't spend more than you earn. And that lesson has served me very, very well. And it will serve you very, very well. So the way you think about money is how you're going to either have a pleasant retirement or work through all your retirement. How you think about it. Real Rogers had a famous quote. Too many people spend money they haven't earned to buy things they don't want to impress people they don't like. Too many people spend money they haven't earned to buy things they don't want to impress people they don't like. So I like that quote. One of the ways we can help you is try to encourage you with good information and sound advice. Each Friday, our premium newsletter goes out, and each Friday, I give you some highlights on what's in it. The first section is current market conditions section. I talked about the economic news out this week, which was very, very little, except for one area, and that was housing. And housing is a big bright spot in our economy right now. If you remember right, after the recession, it was a big dull spot with a heavy, heavy burden of foreclosures and many houses under the water. And no, in several years, usually coming out of recession, housing helps us get out of it. Not this one. But now it's strong. Now, and I talk about the consumer spending, and the numbers are not that strong. The economic numbers recently have been fairly weak. We're going to have next week some consumer spending information for September. So that'll be interesting. Our most popular feature, give you a couple stock ideas, two stock ideas to put on your watch list. And this week in portfolio management, I talked about the Federal Reserve and what's going on with interest rates and how that affects your portfolio. And then in the consumer watch section, did you know that the average car payment in the United States is $485? And the average new car loan is 66 months. You know how much money that's costing you? A ton of money. If you want to try the newsletter, it's $9.99 a month, $9.99 a month. You get it every Friday in your email box. And there is no need for long-term subscriptions. You don't have to do that. You sign up just by going to investtalk.com and scroll down to the bottom of the page. Speaking of information perspective, our recommended book section on investtalk.com is a great resource for you. We have a listing of Warren Buffett's three favorite books and many more. Click on the investment tag on investtalk.com. So, where are good sources of information online? Maybe you'd like to share your favorite sites. We're here to answer your questions. Bring them now to 888-99-CHARP. So let's take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
This is Gus from Philadelphia. I listen to your program on my podcast, and I rarely miss one. I enjoy it very much, and thank you for bringing it to all the listeners. My question revolves around the placement of assets into various retirement accounts. as the type of accounts that we all have propagate, and we have 401ks and IRAs and Roth IRAs and brokerage accounts, one of the areas that I want to make sure I'm paying particular attention to is what type of investment goes into what type of account. For instance, I put my mutual funds primarily in my 401k. I put my stock and my ETFs primarily in my brokerage account. And where I invest in ETF, REIT-style ETFs, like the WPS or the VNQ, my thought is to put those into either an IRA or a Roth IRA because of the taxable events that they throw off. But they are ETFs, not straight-up REITs that I'm investing in. So I wonder if it makes a difference. So I wanted to call and ask you your opinion on how to properly allocate what type of investment into what type of account. And again, thank you for all your help and support. Enjoy the show. Bye.
And that's a very good question. Very good question. Because, you know, we always want to pay the least amount of tax. We all want to pay our fair share of tax, but we want to pay our least amount of tax that we can. And I would suggest that in your IRAs and your 401ks, if you're going to do a lot of trading, that's where you want to kind of do it, okay? The buy and hold stuff should be more towards your, you know, non-tax deferred stuff so that you don't have to, and you're more growth-oriented maybe there. Because of tax consequences. And that's how you have to think about it. What am I going to do as far as my tax consequences? But something you didn't bring up, when you have all these various accounts, you need to look at them as one big account and, you know, and determine what kind of investor you want to be. Do you want to be a growth investor? Do you want to conserve assets and be an income investor? Do you want to designate part of that as income and part of it as growth? And then once you've decided that, then you decide what account you're going to do what kind of trading or buy and hold or investing in. You know, your REITs, for instance, throw off a lot of dividend, as you point out, a lot of dividends. And, you know, if you have that in a regular account, you got to pay taxes on those dividends. If you do trading, you want to be a more active trader, which is, I'm not suggesting that you should, but if you are, you know, if you do that in your IRA or 401k, you don't have to think about tax consequences. Oh, I got to hold this because it's short-term or long-term tax issues. You don't have to think about those kinds of things. Very good question, though, and thanks for listening. I appreciate it. What's wrong with this picture? A mutual fund shows an average return of 9%, but the individual mutual fund investor gets anywhere from 4.5% to 7%. Mutual fund shortfall. That's one of our talking points. Why is that happening? That's going to be what we're going to discuss, the main talking point. And another one, worry about what you can control, not what you can't control. Everybody's worried about things. There's things you can control and things you can't. So I'm going to go over some of those and what you should and should not worry about. Why China does not want the Fed to hike interest rates. Think about that. Why does China does not want the Federal Reserve, our Federal Reserve, to raise rates? Why at this, and they lowered rates today again. This is like the sixth time now. The Chinese are lowering rates, but they don't want our Fed to hike rates. Why? And here's something that came across. It might take a little bit longer to go over than normal. Children's age-based knowledge about money. At what age or what grade school levels should they know what about money? Like in grade school, what should they know? In middle school, what should they know? In high school, what should they know? And you as a parent or grandparent or uncle or whatever you are might want to help with this. And there's a lot to go over here, so I'm not sure if I can get to it all. But I find it pretty interesting and informative and necessary. The market today, we had a follow through day. We had a big ape update today, and the market followed through today, up 157 points on the Dow, 111 on the Nasdaq, which is a big move, 23 on the S&P 500. Now, the problem I have with these big moves of yesterday and today. Yesterday, the move was based on what Draghi of the ECB said. Today's move was based on China lowering interest rates today. So Nothing to do with it here in the United States, or at least not much. I mean, there was earnings out, and good numbers and bad numbers. But I don't think that was the driver. I think it was what's happening elsewhere. And you do know next week we have a Federal Reserve meeting, right? You know that. Then we have one last one in December. Fed's not going to do anything next week, and I doubt it that they'll do anything in December. Because we just don't have the strong enough numbers. We don't have inflation that they're looking for. There's just reasons not to do it. That's what we're going to discuss, but of course, you come first. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. We thank you all for having voted so far in our straw vote for what our next November 18th webinar is going to be on. We want you to help decide the topic. So take our instant survey, choose from our list, or write in your own idea. Just go to investtalk.com, click on Invest Talk tab, and click on webinar.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. These investments may appear similar to stocks, but they have some distinct qualities. ETNs, MLPs, and REITs. Trading off the beaten path, that's our talking point for Monday's podcast. We hope you'll join us then.
This is Gary from San Leandro. I would like to have your opinion of Cummins, CMI. What's your long-term outlook, and where would one want to buy in at? Thank you very much. Bye.
Well, Cummins Engine is big. It's a $20 billion company, Cummins, CMI, headquarters out of Columbus. Manufactures diesel, natural gas engines, electric power generation systems, and engine-related products for, everybody, Fords and GMs and Chryslers and the big truck companies, you name it, they make it. Okay, they're going to make $9.99 this year, up 8 cents from last 8% from last year, $10.35 next year, another 4%. They're growing between 4% and 10%, quarter after quarter, solid company. And of course, it's attached to the economic cycle, so it goes down when the economy tanks and goes up when it grows. And we're in a growth period, even though not strong growth, we're still in a growth period. The average, the stock's selling for $112, and it's going to make $10.35 next year. So what is that, 11 PE? And the five-year range is 9 to 20. Return on equity is 22. This is a good, solid company. Good, solid company. So what you're, but if you look at a chart, it fell from $144 or so down to $104 even in the beginning of October. So now, is it cheap enough to buy? And why did it fall? Was it because of concern over the economy and the economic cycle? Maybe that a recession on the horizon? I don't think it's on the horizon yet. I think it's a great buy right here, by the way. I think it's fell to a low, 104, bounced up to 114, fell back down to 108, and now is back up to 112. That, to me, is a double bottom, not a perfect double bottom, but it's a higher low than the first low. And the fundamentals tell me long-term, this looks pretty good. I mean, it pays a 3.5% dividend while you're waiting. I kind of like it. Just remember, it's attached to the economic cycle, and in an economic downturn, this will go down. Don't think it won't. It will. Okay? Our Invest Talk number is 888-99-CHART. You can join us right now. I'd love to talk with you. Remember, you come first. Whatever topic you want to discuss is the topic we're going to discuss. So give us a call. You're listening to Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to talk about worrying about things you can control instead of things you can't control, why China doesn't want the Fed to hike interest rates, and children's age-based knowledge about money. Those are the things I want to discuss. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So why is it that the mutual funds have much better returns than people? In other words, a mutual fund will report its return of all, let's just take one, 9% a year for the last 10 years. And why is the average person's performance much worse than that? There's two reasons for this. Two. One reason, which is not the primary reason, but one reason is because there's cost involved. When you buy a mutual fund, you have to pay the fee. That cost. That doesn't mean they don't have a return. So it's not necessarily a net return that they're quoting. It's gross return. This is how much return they had. And then what did they have to pay? What did you have to pay to own that fund? But that's not the main cost. That's not really even just the cost that you really should worry about. The biggest problem is the investor in these funds. People pick them wrong. First, what they do is they look at last year and the year before and the year before returns and say, look how well this one has done. I'm going to buy this one. And invariably, when a mutual fund has done really good last year, it will not do very good this year. Because the same kinds of stocks don't do the same thing year after year after year. It's uncommon. So you buy high a mutual fund because of past performance. And then you get disappointed and you sell it after it's fallen. It's been proven over and over and over again. The stocks investment vehicles that have done poorly in the past means they're cheap, and they're the ones who are probably going to do better in the future. Buy low and sell high. But what we're getting is buying high and selling low. And it's understandable people thinking this, because in our lives, you know, it makes sense when whatever you're doing and you know you've done it before and it's worked before in the past, or you take a look at the history and figure out what something has done before, it just as a natural consequence that you consider, well, it's good, it should repeat. In investing, it's a bit different than that. Not necessarily so. Now, that doesn't mean buying bad things or poor investments or bad fundamentals of something. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a asset class is done poorly, and now should you be buying it? An asset class that's done very well, and should you be buying that? And we're going to talk about one right now, because we're going to talk to Joe in San Diego. He wants to talk about Chevron. How you doing, Joe?
Good. How you doing, Steve?
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
So I'm about 75% in cash, and about 6 weeks ago, the market dropped about 10%, and oil started leveling off.
Yep.
So I bought Chevron on sale. Okay. And I didn't expect it to be up 18%. What are your recommendations at this point?
Yeah, we bought ExxonMobil and Schlumberger because we thought they would do well. And I'll tell you this, I think you hold on to it, Joe. Chevron still is a very, you know, if you look at the sales numbers, you say, man, the sales have been going down the quarter after quarter for the last year. And earnings in 2014 were $10.14. And this year they're going to be $3.25. You say, oh, man, that's a terrible looking stock. Look how bad it's done. Well, everybody already knows that. It's all on the play of oil coming back in price. It's not going to go back to $80 a barrel anytime soon. But I think it can go back to $55, $60 a barrel by next year sometime. So I don't think the run's over, Joe.
What about the Iraqis presenting their oil on the market?
Yeah, that's going to put more pressure downward, but we are taking a lot because of the drillers are being clobbered and, you know, much less drilling. There's going to be a slack in supply with the Iraqis bringing on supply. So it's going to be an issue. So, that's something to worry about, Joe, but I still think that's why oil is not going to go up to 80, 90, 100 bucks a barrel. If the economies in China and Europe start to turn around, that's going to increase demand.
True.
I just think you stick with it for the time being. I just do.
Perfect. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for the call. That's CVX Chevron, everybody. We've reached the halfway mark in the hour. There's still plenty of time to join in the discussion. Invest Talk works better when you get involved, like Joe did, talk about Chevron. So you can get through by phone if you want. If you're a podcast listener, you can call anytime. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, 888-99-CHART, areas in Southern California. Please hold on.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Are you approaching retirement? The specifics of retirement differ for everyone, of course, but the broad goal is to have the financial freedom to live your life in comfort. It is increasingly important to have an executable plan that grows and protects your assets. If you would like to see what a retirement plan looks like, or you have questions you'd like to ask directly, get a note to Steve or Justin. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Justin, and they'll get right back to you.
888-992-4278. And Saeed, thank you for calling back, Saeed. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Steve, thank you for taking my call again.
Thank you.
Very quick, my question is, there are two types of different markets. One is market, the equity market, and the other one is the bond market.
Yes.
And we know the bond market is bigger than equity market.
Yes.
Generally, concept is that if the equity market is going up, which shows the economy is good and everything, so the bond market sell-off, which means bonds supposed to be, the interest rate supposed to be high, and bond price is supposed to be low. But I am seeing completely different picture here, and this is a very dangerous picture, which means the bond market is all-time high, and stock market is all-time high. Can you explain this? Because this is very unusual, or
it is,
or I don't know.
It's very unusual, Saeed, and you've really hit on something that's one of the reasons why I've been pretty cautious for a while, is because the bond market has been falling for a while. In other words, let me rephrase that. The bond market has been weakening. If you look at the junk bond market especially, and usually the bond market leads the stock market. Because as you pointed out, the bond market is much larger. It's much more a sophisticated market. It's not there's not a lot of people in there that are not knowledgeable. It's more knowledgeable people in the bond market. And it's given a signal that there's problems. Interest rates are extremely low. We all know that. And at the same time, you know, can the market rally when interest rates are this low? Yes. Are we done with low interest rates? And that has been the big issue. Because when interest rates start to rise, that means liquidity comes out of the market, the bond market, and that usually also means liquidity come out of the stock market. So, Saeed, it's very odd. We're not able to use historical norms to gauge this because it's not working. So it's an odd situation all the way around. And that's because the Federal Reserve has really distorted the bond market. It's not acting normal. So we have to adjust. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense to you, Saeed.
I totally understand. So what's going to be the end? The end is going to be the equity market bubble is going to burst, or what?
At some point, yes. At some point, yields worldwide, not just here in the United States, yields are going to revert to normal, but normal-ish. It'll start to rise. They won't be zero. That's not normal. That's in history of time. That's not normal. If the Fed raises a quarter point or half a point, that really probably won't do much. But people will freak out because of the direction that they've changed direction. But I think the Fed probably not going to raise rates. Because at the same time, we got deflation around the world, and they want inflation. They borrowed so much money, the government, they need to have money inflated to make it worth less in the future so governments can pay down debt. If you have deflation, debt will skyrocket as far as trying to pay it back. Saeed, it's very odd. This whole picture looks very odd to me. Thanks for the call, Saeed. I appreciate it. I really do. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Arias. How you doing, Arias?
Pretty good, Steve. And yourself?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Question for you. A little politics here, but it still involves the market.
Okay.
We see Xi Jinping is going around making good relationships and deals. And, you know, he made a big purchase here of Boeing. I think it was $40-something billion deal with Boeing. Mm-hmm. Now he's in Europe, and he's making a lot of deals. What does this mean for China, and what does it mean for the market?
Well, China is a very big economy. They're our size, okay? So he, you know, he's trying to boost, he needs to boost his economy because it's, even though they said it was growing 6.9% just last week as far as GDP, yes, most experts believe it's about half of that, okay?
Okay.
So he's kind of, he's trying to, he's just being an ambassador of Chinese things. They want to grow their economy, and they've, and they traditionally have done it through exports. And they've been changing their economy to be more consumer-driven, but exports are still very important to them. So he's just being an ambassador around the world to try to get the economies growing. And that's one of my talking points, is why the Chinese don't want us, to the Federal Reserve, to raise the rates. They don't want that because, well, I'm going to get into that, but that's part of the whole thing of just trying to be a good ambassador around the world. And of course, China wants to be the king. We are the king. They want to be the king, right?
Yes.
And that's,
yes,
that's totally understandable. And, you know, they have a government that is a lot more supportive of the economic activity versus our government, who likes to attack successful economic activity. Have you noticed,
yes,
that too?
Yes.
So
now, let me ask you something, though,
sure,
quick, not to cut you off. Now, if the street thinking that it's half of the 6.9,
mm-hmm,
let's say it's 6, just for argument's sake.
Okay.
That's still nice growth.
Yeah.
It may not be 7 or 8, but we're not growing 6%.
We're not even growing half of that. You know?
Exactly.
So that's still very strong growth. And I think a lot of people lose sight of the fact that there's a huge economy, about our size, growing much faster than we are.
Yes.
So, you know, that's really a net positive in the world. That what we're trying to do, what's happening here, Arias, is the whole economic system is trying to readjust downward to the less strong growth. And it started with commodities being crushed, because when China's growing 7 to 10%, you know, there's a huge demand on commodities worldwide. So all the commodity producers ratchet up production. Now that they're growing half of that, these commodity producers have to cut production. And that's what you've seen in the last year or two. And that's why commodities have got hit so hard. And that's one of the reasons why we have so much less inflation. And since we've cut that, probably commodity prices in the future, like oil, will probably start increasing because the demand is still there and supply has been cut.
One last question.
Yeah.
They're not participating in this TPP. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? They're not going to be one of the countries that's going to participate in it, from what I've been reading.
I don't think, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's neither bad nor good. I don't think it's that important.
Okay.
Appreciate the call.
Thanks,
Arias. Thank you very much. Why does China not want the Fed to raise rates? Well, China cut its rates again today. This is like the fifth or sixth time. So they know they have an economic problem. They need to spur growth. China is worried about a Fed rate hike that will tighten monetary policy. They don't want that in the U.S. If you tighten monetary policy in the U.S., what is that going to lead to? That's going to lead to slower growth, not only in the U.S., but in the world. Also, if the Fed raises rates, that'll mean the dollar goes up in value versus other currencies. And if you remember right, the Chinese have tied their currency to our currency, meaning that their currency will go up in value. Do you remember a few weeks ago when they loosened the bands and reduced the bands, meaning how tight their currency is tied to our currency? They loosened them a few weeks ago, I don't remember, by about 2%. Well, if the dollar keeps going up, that effort of loosening those bands to try to keep their money cheap is worthless. right? It's not working because if the dollar goes up, you know, my 2% loosening, well, the dollar went up 2%, so it didn't affect anything. And so if the Chinese yuan or yuan, if that goes up in value, how's that? That's going to hurt their exports. Remember, we have a currency war going on around the world. I don't know if you've noticed that, but it's been happening for some time. And the U.S. is not playing much to that currency war. We're not really, not playing that game. We were, but now we're thinking about. Well, you can still argue that we still are because the Fed has not raised the rates, but they haven't raised the rates more in concern over the lack of inflation. They certainly can't say the lack of the unemployment rate's low, even though the labor participation rate is not very good. So there's really no good reason for the Fed to raise rates, other than they don't want them at zero. That's their reason. And I've said that many times. That's the only reason they have. Okay, it is time to review your retirement portfolio. I'm happy to meet with a limited number of our listeners and on one-on-one session with people. I do this a couple times a month. My day is full on November 11th in San Jose, full. But I am taking appointments for San Diego County at our La Jolla satellite office on December 2nd. December 2nd. Times are set on a first-come, first-served basis. Just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial. Because your
InvestTalk
home is
an
important component in your retirement planning, now KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff to help you make the best possible choices. And you can always see the entire range of investment programs at investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab.
Worry about what you can control, not what you can't control. Everybody's freaking out about the Fed, about the debt ceiling coming up. Inflation or deflation, the economy is turning down, the world economy is slow, Greek is falling, Greek debt is falling, whatever. You can't control almost all that information. You can't control that. But what you can control is you. You control your debt level, especially when you're getting closer to retirement. What can you control? You can't control your investments even. What's in within your power is what you do in your life, and that means you can control your debt. So get it down, pay it off before you retire. You can also control your spending. You control your spending. So those are two things you have in control. Another thing is about your debt, about your investments. What can you control? Well, in your income part of your investments, you can control that by laddering bonds or buying high dividend paying stocks. You can't control whether they go up and down in value, but you can control what kind of yield you're getting because you can buy those things that have good yields. You can also control to some degree of the volatility of your stock investments. You can control that by buying low beta stock that are not as volatile as the overall stock market. These things are within your control. Quit freaking out about the things that are out of your control. They're out of your control. Okay, so if they're freaking you out and you just can't stand it because you're worried about your investments, that means you have too much risk in your investment. Pull back on the risk. Pull it back. Don't be so risky. You need to have sleep at night investments, people, that you don't worry about. Okay? Long-term investments do great. But if you're going to freak out about them all the time, you have control. So take the control back. Don't let the investment control you. You control them. I just wanted to point that out. I want to talk about children's age-based knowledge about money. Like, for instance, in grade school, what should they know coming out of grade school? I'm talking about from first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. What should they know coming out of that? And then middle school, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. I guess that's middle school. And then high school, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, or 10th, 11th, 12th. I don't know if it's 9th through 12 now. I'm not sure. But what should you know in those that age group? Okay? And it's something. And it, these are things that are, you know, starting with the grade school, basic stuff. Like, I'll even give you a couple. The difference between savings and investing. They should know in grade school what the difference is between saving and investing. They should know the concepts of compound interest. I'm not talking about your second grader, but I'm talking about your fifth grader or your sixth grader. The concept. They don't need to know how to do it, just know about the concept of it. How to count and use money. They should also know at this stage why education can lead to more money. They should know the principles about borrowing and a budget. That's in grade school, everybody. Start them young. Don't wait. Start them at an early age so they kind of know these concepts. Now, I want to go over what they should know in middle school and then what they should know in high school. It gets more sophisticated, obviously, and you should teach them more sophisticated things. Parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, doesn't matter. This is your job. It is your job. 888-992-4278. We're here for any beginner or experienced question. Doesn't matter. Same number all the time. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific Time. 888-992-4278.
Hi, Steve. I listened to your show on the podcast. I'm calling in with a question concerning Citicorp. I currently have some shares. I want to see what your opinion is for the next year. Do I continue to hold or sell at which dollar point? You have a great show. Thanks.
Citigroup. Citigroup is the symbol C, and a global holding company offering banking, investment, insurance, credit card services, and in 160 countries. It's a $161 billion company. It's a huge company. Doesn't pay a lot of dividends, only 0.4%, which, you know. It might be because they lost $44 a share in 2008. And all the years since then, the money they've made hasn't even come up to about two-thirds of that amount. They haven't made it back. Maybe that's why the dividend's still low. Anyways, it has tested a bottom at around $48 a share. It was at $47 way back in beginning of the year, rose up to $60 in about, you know, late July. Fell sharply with the market, retested that low just like the market, is now coming off it. I think you want to hold on to it at this point. I think you want to hold on to it. It's going to make $5.77 a share next year, and the stock is a $53 stock, so that means it'll be under a 10 PE. Now, don't get excited. A 10 PE is not necessarily low for Citigroup because as low as it's been in the last 5 years is 6. 6 to 17 is the range. So it's still, sales are still weak. Earnings are increasing. But it's a big blue chip stock. So it should do well over any length of time. In the next year, unless we fall into recession, which I don't think we are, maybe late next year or the year after, but not anytime soon, this stock should do well. I mean, not great, but it should do well. Citigroup, everybody. C is the symbol. Okay, now we're talking about children's age-based knowledge, and I talked about what you should teach them while they're still in grade school. Middle school, how interest rates, inflation affect the value of savings and investing. That's what you should start talking about. How interest rates, inflation, and inflation affect the value of savings and investing. How to calculate interest. What are financial assets? Learning the difference between hype from fact when you're being sold something. Becoming more critical thinker about finances. Knowing you can't buy everything. Can't own anything. Can't buy everything. High school. When you get into high school, you need the kids need to know benefits and risks of starting a business. College as an important financial decision. Not just because you want to be more education, but it's a financial decision. It costs money to go to college, And what are the benefits once you get out of college? So if you want to be a carpenter, you don't need to go to college. It costs too much for what you're going to be. So you got to understand that, and the kids should know that. How taxes affect income. How does it do that? What do government agencies do, like the SEC, FDIC, the Federal Reserve? What do? How to compare and shop for credit. How to protect yourself from identity theft. This is all in high school. What different kinds of insurance? What do they do? What are the different kinds of insurance and what do they do? We're talking about homeowners insurance, life insurance, auto insurance. What are they? What do they do? What's an annuity? Okay, so those are the areas that you need to start teaching your kids. Okay, you go from simple to more complex. So that by the time they go into or out of college, they have a very good understanding how the system, economic system here in the United States works. You know, and it's not an economic system just in the United States. This is how economic systems work, period. You can influence them with political systems, but economic systems work this way. Our hour's up. I hope it's been a good use of your time. Don't forget to vote. Select the subject for our next webinar coming up Wednesday, November 18th at 6:30 Pacific time. Just go to investtalk.com. That's investtalk.com and click on InvestTalk, the InvestTalk tab. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPB Financial, thanks for listening, and we hope you can join us again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.